I'd like to call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 1st, 2019, and the time is 1:30 p.m. Members present is Representative Knopp, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Johnston, Representative Merrick, Representative Josephson, and Representative Laban, and Representative Ortiz. And I am Co-Chair Wilson, and today we're going to be hearing two bills, HB 87 and HB 106. To begin, we will be hearing HB 87, Liquefied Natural Gas Storage Credit. And we're going to hear first from the bill presenter, Representative Thompson. Please come to the table. Please put yourself on the record and anyone else you would like to have with you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm Steve Thompson. I represent House District 2 up in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I have with me my staff, Seth Witten. Seth?
For the record, Seth Witten, staff to Representative Thompson.
First, I want to thank the co-chair and the committee for hearing House Bill 87 today. This bill came about through conversations with stakeholders in the interior about our progress on efforts to mitigate high energy costs and improve our air quality. A key theme in these conversations has been the importance of ensuring that there was we're doing everything that we can to stay on track with the Interior Energy Project. In 2015, the legislature passed House Bill 105 to renew and advance the Interior Energy Project, a project designed to bring low-cost energy to as many residents and businesses in the interior of Alaska as quickly as possible. It has resulted in the creation of the Interior Gas Utility, a not-for-profit public utility serving the interior. In 2012, the legislature passed legislation to incentivize the development of liquefied natural gas storage, a key component in achieving the economy of scale that will enable widespread use of natural gas in Fairbanks and North Pole. This legislation provides credits for the construction of above-ground LNG storage facilities with a capacity of 25,000 gallons or more. There are currently two projects underway, one in Fairbanks and one in North Pole, that will benefit from these credits. HB 87 will extend the sunset date of the original legislation by 18 months in order to ensure that the projects underway will be able to capitalize on the existing credits. This is a bill that can help to lower energy costs and improve air quality in an area of the state that desperately needs to do that. We have with us today the General Manager of the Interior Gas Utility Project, Dan Britton, who's behind me, who will do a slide presentation for you. And we have several people online that would like to testify to this bill also. And do you have any questions?
See no questions. We will then go to Mr. Britton. If you would like to come to the table, put yourself on the record. You may begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and committee members. It's my pleasure to be here today. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about these important storage tax credits for the community of Fairbanks. Just as a quick reminder, the whole purpose of the Interior Energy Project was to bring low-cost energy to as many residents and businesses of Interior Alaska as possible, as quickly as possible, to help stabilize our economy and help improve the air quality in our community. A little bit of history. Fairbanks Natural Gas began operating in Fairbanks in the spring of 1998, giving Interior residents access to natural gas for the first time as an alternative to heating oil and burning solid fuels. Today we have over 1,100 residential and commercial customers and that are currently able to use natural gas. In November of 2012, the Fairbanks North Star Borough acquired its natural gas utility power via transfers from the city of Fairbanks and the city of North Pole and established the Interior Alaska Natural Gas Utility, a publicly owned gas utility to bring low-cost gas to as many consumers as possible. In May of 2018, the Interior Gas Utility consolidated with Fairbanks Natural Gas, and we're now operating an integrated, non not-for-profit public utility. Some of the reasons why this project is so important to our community. One is, according to the Council for Community and Economic Research, the Fairbanks North Star Borough typically has some of the highest utility costs in the nation for the 300-plus urban areas regularly surveyed. And in September 2006, the EPA lowered the national ambient air quality standards for fine particulate matter, less than 2.5 micrometer in diameter, which is anything above that is a human health hazard. In 2009, the EPA designated the more populated portions of the Fairbanks North Star Borough as a non-attainment area relating to PM2.5. The eastern portion of the non-attainment area, North Pole, has some of the worst air pollution in the nation, 3.5 times the legal limit and almost 2 times worse than the next worst area in the U.S. The Fairbanks North Star Borough's long-term efforts for clean air are focused on bringing clean, affordable natural gas to the Fairbanks area for space heat. This slide does a quick comparison to the price of heating fuel in Fairbanks to the price of natural gas in Anchorage and the price of natural gas in the U.S. As you can see, the price of heating fuel in Fairbanks trends much higher than most in any areas that have natural gas service. This slide compares the historical heating costs in Fairbanks to heating oil. As you can see, the green line is pretty stably priced energy. The blue line is the cost of heating oil. And for the most part, the cost of natural gas is less costly than heating oil, but at times of low oil costs, the heating oil can be slightly cheaper. But so the two projects we're here to talk about specifically today are the large storage tank that's under construction in Fairbanks. This is a 5.25 million gallon tank. It's what we call a full containment double wall design, which is the safest LNG tank design that you can select when completing a project. We started in January of 2018, and it's advancing on schedule with an estimated completion date in the fall of 2019. Total construction costs of $58.4 million. What we've termed this tank is the heart of the interior energy project. This tank allows us to begin to add new customers and to begin to start alleviating the poor air quality. It's not very often you get to see the inside of an LNG tank, but this the inside of the tank, you can see the suspended deck on the top is aluminum ceiling. The steel inside tank is made of 9% nickel. LNG is stored at minus 260 degrees Fahrenheit, so the specialty alloys will deal with those cold temperatures. The tank now, inner and outer, is substantially complete, and they're beginning to work on the stairs, the piping and the venting that's all part of the tank. So we're making good progress in this facility. In addition to the Fairbanks storage facility, we have a facility that's been under design for North Pole. You'll see a couple slides in the forward that we have installed distribution systems both in Fairbanks and North Pole. This facility is designed to serve that previously installed distribution system. It's estimated at $12.1 million. We've completed the 100% of the engineering. We issued RFPs in February and received proposals on March 21st that are currently under evaluation. We have a target completion date towards the end of 2019, but it is a very tight schedule. And as with large construction projects, the chances of hitting that date can be challenging. This facility will have two 75,000-gallon storage tanks. A multi-purpose building will be connected to the 73 miles of existing piping. The two tanks that will be part of this facility are tanks that will be relocated from the existing storage facility that's providing service in Fairbanks once the new large 5.25 million-gallon tank comes online. Just the site layout for interest sake of the North Pole facility, you can see the two tanks, the large, or the 75,000 gallon tanks. We have an area where the trucks come in and offload. And then vaporization equipment that takes the gas from minus 260 degrees up to about 50 degrees so it can be injected into the distribution piping system. This facility is located across from what historically was the Flint Hills Refinery and across from where Golden Valley Electric operates one of their power plants. So Golden Valley is a potential consumer of natural gas in the future. The benefits of these storage projects is they allow us to begin serving firm customers again in Fairbanks so that we can move the interior energy project forward. They provide for a high level of security of supply. Our customers will be relying on natural gas for their heating, and so we need to make sure that our supply is as secure as possible. So just these storage facilities in conjunction with our existing liquefaction facility, which is in Point McKenzie, Alaska, will allow us to add an additional 3,000 residential customers beginning the summer of 2020. The storage tax credits that we are talking about are vital in helping sure we can keep the cost down, and the lower the cost, the greater level of conversion, the higher benefit there is to air quality. These tax credits will be under the oversight of the RCA, the Interior Gas Utility Board of Directors, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, ensuring that the savings are passed on to the consumers in Fairbanks and ratepayers. The estimated impact on our rates related to these storage tax credits, the Fairbanks facility will qualify for the maximum available on any one credit, which is $15 million. The alternatives of 50% of the total capital cost, so the North Pole facility with a $12.1 million capital would qualify for approximately $6 million for a total of $21 million. And the range of the rate benefit to our consumers based on our current demand is almost $2 per 1,000 cubic feet. And for our And under our base case, demand is about 72 cents per 1,000 cubic feet. As the demand grows, the costs are spread over more volume. So if we are unsuccessful with the storage tax credits, we will need to incur approximately $21 million in additional debt, which will, as you can see, has a direct impact to our customer costs. Just for perspective, this is the currently installed distribution network in Fairbanks. This includes approximately 140 miles of distribution pipe network, so you can see a significant portion of the Fairbanks proper has access to natural gas. Down on the south side of the map, you can see a small red square. That's the location of the storage facilities, which send the gas out into the buried distribution system from there. In North Pole, we have 72 miles of installed pipe network, essentially south of Hearst Road in one of the higher areas of non-attainment for poor air quality. So expanding gas into this area is extremely important. That ends my presentation, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And just so all know, I don't have a conflict of interest. None of that pipe goes to my house. So, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, through your testimony, you're saying without the adoption of or granting these credits to both North Pole and Fairbanks, the borough will take on an additional $21 million in debt. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it's actually the ratepayers of the Interior Gas Utility that would take on that debt. The borough itself is not does not take on the debt. It's the utility itself.
Follow up.
So, if we do buy into these bills and take up the credits, then make it eligible for the credit program, then the state is obligated an additional $21 million. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, that would be the state that would pay those tax credits.
Representative LeBond.
I guess in the spirit of potential conflicts of interest, that piping does go in front of my home in House District 1. And if you were to look at the prior map, House District 1 is the heaviest concentration of piping that extends not just residential but to commercial. And Madam Chair, the Fairbanks community has been waiting, oh, like 50 years for this project to arrive. And Mr. Britton mentioned Fairbanks Natural Gas and the 1,100 customers that have been served in the interior since 1998. This is an expansion of a service that's already available to Fairbanks, but the concentration for the residential, for the homeowners, is significantly greater with this project than under Fairbanks Natural Gas. And that's what's most exciting to me. So I do encourage this committee to support the extension of the timeline for these credits. They're critical to the energy needs of Fairbanks and to breathing clean air. So there's multiple benefits. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that question. I appreciate it. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, your slide, unnumbered, but it says that there are 3,000 new residential customers would benefit from this. And I'm just trying to figure out, you've got a borough with about 90,000 people. Does that mean that you need a lot more of this to achieve? And I know some of them are very rural and may not get there, but how does that work? Do we need 30 more storage facilities, or how does that play out?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, excuse me. This is the first step of the Interior Energy Project. The storage facilities are the first step that allows us to add new customers. The next step will be additional liquefaction capacity. We're currently under design for that to expand our liquefaction from 50,000 gallons a day to 100,000 gallons with an additional 100,000 gallons a day. Our board of directors approved us moving forward with the front end engineering and design work for that project. So the storage facility, what it does is it allows us to use our existing production assets and run them 365 days a year. And so we'll fill the storage during the summer. We can draw down the storage during the winter to meet our peak needs. And that's what allows that first group of 3,000 new customers. The additional liquefaction capacity allows us to go beyond the 3,000 customers and begin adding the next several thousand. So these storage facilities are meant to satisfy the Interior Energy Project's storage needs well into the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, we're going to go to Ms. Glover, who has from the Tax Division from the Department of Revenue, to go over our fiscal note. Are you online?
Yes, I am.
You put yourself on the record and please go over the fiscal note with us, please.
Okay, for the record, Colleen Glover, Tax Director for the Department of Revenue. And I just wanted to, Mr. Britton mentioned earlier that not too many people get to go inside of one of these large storage tanks. And I actually had the opportunity in Fairbanks in February to go inside that tank, and it is very impressive. So thank you for that. Just to go over the fiscal note, there is no cost or impact to the Tax Division. This is an extension of an existing credit that's already programmed into our system. We did show the fiscal note as being indeterminate. That was because of not wanting to forecast taxpayer confidential information. The taxpayer has given you information which they expect for the credit. Also, if the credit's extended, it possibly could open it up to new entities that we're not aware of. And to date, no entity has gotten this credit. It's just an extension for 18 months. It's only for LNG storage facilities that have a certain capacity. And there is provisions in current statute that if the facility ceases operations and a certain amount of time, then after 9 years, they would have to pay back some of the credit. And that doesn't change with this bill. And it has an effective immediate date.
So is this a cashable credit, or is this a credit that they take off their tax liability?
Representative Wilson, this could be either. It is one that is available for cash from the oil and gas tax credit fund, or the O2A fund that we call it, or it could be something that is a credit against their state corporate income tax.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay, with that, we're going to open public testimony. And first I have Mayor Ward from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Mayor Ward, if you could put yourself on the record and your affiliation.
Yes, Bryce Ward, Borough Mayor for the Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Wilson. testifying on the storage gas credit, the gas credit storage bill, there was some mention earlier on the number of homes and properties in which this project would serve, both in the Fairbanks and Norpol area. The Fairbanks North Star Borough currently does have 100,000 residents approximately, with about 25,000 homes. So what we're talking about with the additional 3,000 customers made possible by the expansion of the storage tanks is 3,000 customers of those 25,000, roughly 25,000 homes. As was mentioned earlier, this is also a key component to addressing the air quality issue that we have in the interior by allowing a cleaner source of energy to be used both for wood, solid fuel burning, heating mechanisms, but then also for oil-fired heating devices within a home. Natural gas is a much cleaner source of fuel than fuel oil or some of the other solid fuel burning appliances that we're currently using. And as the Fairbanks North Star Borough, majority of the Fairbanks North Star Borough is currently in a non-attainment area, it is critical that we work on installing mechanisms and ways in which people can be able to heat their homes more cleanly. So this is a key component in the community's effort to be able to clean up the air, the PM2.5 air quality issue that we have. That's all I have.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Mayor. Next will be Michael Meeks. If you could please put yourself on the record and your affiliation.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Michael Meeks, the Chief of Staff to the Mayor of Fairbanks. I was also an original board member for the Interior Gas Utility. As chairman of that board for 3 years and vice chair for two, the Interior needs to have the tax credit extension for LNG storage facilities. The last financial model I saw incorporated the tax credits into IGU's calculation for estimated cost at the meter for the customer. Without this extension, the price of the meter will increase for the customer, and the number of customers who choose to convert from fuel oil to gas will decrease. The loss of the tax credits would mean that IGE would have to make up that money somehow, and most likely it would be through bonds incurring more debt. And if I remember correctly, the loss of the tax credits would incur a little over $21 million additional dollars in debt and would add another $1.93 MCF to the customer using the current demand forecast models. We must make the cost at the meter low enough to attract customers. This project is already challenged with customer density issues and cost. Let's try not to make it any harder with the loss of these credits. These increased costs will do nothing to help our air quality issues and our energy security concerns. Please look favorably on this bill. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Meeks. Next will be John Cook. John?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is John Cook. I'm CFO for J&J Development, LLC, and other affiliated entities that are 100% owned by Jerry Sadler. I'm calling in support of HB 87 today. For those of you not from Fairbanks, our company owns and has developed a lot of the retail box store land over in the Bentley Trust area going back to about 2006, 2007. For about the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've been hampered by adding any new construction in that area. Most of the retail box stores that come in build off the same footprint nationwide. They use gas-fired rooftop heaters and air conditioners to heat the store. So when you talk to them about other forms of space heating like diesel, they just that won't work for them. Literally every square inch of their store in all three dimensions is accounted for. So we have not been able to add uninterruptible supply for several years. It's hampered us from developing our property and providing jobs and economic development to Fairbanks. So previous legislatures and administrations have been supportive of the efforts to date, and we are supportive as well as of getting this over the finish line at this juncture. So we'd appreciate to your support. These folks that come into town provide jobs. We were involved in the Costco development here, which was an existing store, but we provided some land to that. Thankfully, they had an existing supply of uninterruptible gas, but developments like that provide tax base, hundreds of jobs, and help lower the cost of living in our community. So thank you for your support, and I'm free to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on HB 87? Anyone else online?
Oh, sorry,
Mr. Stewart. Please put your name on.
Stewart up in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Please put your name on the record and your affiliations. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, it's fine. Hello, my name is Jomo Stewart. I'm the Energy, Military, and Mining Project Manager for the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. And honestly, ma'am, Mayor Ward, Mr. Cook, and Mr. Meek did such a fine job testifying. I was going to be okay with just riding with them. But since I do have a moment, simply want to put on record, again, that the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, we've been long supporters of this project. This is really the last bit of state investment and assistance to the project. And we do believe that, you know, we would like the state to be able to follow through. The LNG storage tax credit was really a follow-on to the Cook Inlet Recovery Act of 2010, I believe, which did get capitalized on with in-ground natural gas storage for CINGSA. And so this simply is, a similar state investment just for above-ground natural gas storage for a community in the heart of Alaska that really could use the cost of energy assistance as well as help with its air quality issues. So we do hope that the state would look favorably, that this committee would look favorably upon this legislation and help it move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart, and again, my apologies. So is there anyone else online? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony on HB 87. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, we're going to set that bill aside. Thank you so much, gentlemen. So next is HB 106, school bond debt reimbursement. And with that, Ms. Gaddis, will you please come to the table, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Lynn Gaddis, staff for Rep. Wilson, and I'm here to present House Bill 106. And I'm trying not to jinx this bill because it is a very, very simple bill. House Bill 106 extends the termination date for the school bond debt reimbursement program and provides for an effective date to July 1, 2025. And it's really that simple. It extends it another 5 years.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, we're going to go to the fiscal note. And with us, we have Ms. Teschner from Department of Education. Could you please put yourself on the record and your affiliation? You may begin.
Good afternoon. For the record, Heidi Teschner, Administrative Services Director with Department of Education and Early Development. And before you is 10 fiscal note for this. It's OMB component number 153. And really, with just extending the debt program's moratorium, current costs of the program would continue, so there'd be no additional costs because no new debt projects would be coming online until 2026. And so at that point in time, we just don't know what that cost would be beyond the fiscal note. Because we don't know what new projects would come online.
And will this bill at all affect the debt that we currently have?
It would just, Madam Chair, would extend the payments of the debt we currently have. So right now for FY20, it was projected about $100 million, that would be paid out. And then going forward each year, the amount would decrease depending on when current projects in the system and those bonds closing out.
Any questions? Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair. Is one of the impacts of this that REAA programs will also see a reduction in the outlay for the programs they have in the queue based on priority? In other words, if there's a reduction in our sort of subsidizing these, they'll have a concomitant and similar sort of reduction on their side?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. So right now, the REA fund itself, REA and Small Municipal School District Fund, that calculation is based off of the annual debt service we pay for this program. So you are right that that amount would decrease over the next 5 years as if this moratorium were to be continued, as it has the last 5 years or 4 years. And that the district's REAs could still apply for the school's construction and major maintenance CIP list every year as they do now and compete with those projects and be funded also through the non-REA fund. So they can, the REA fund doesn't strictly fund them. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Follow up.
So there's another avenue for them to get state revenue that would not be sort of downward adjusted from this legislation. Is that what you're saying? There's some other fund out there?
Through the chair, let me clarify. The they would still be able to apply for the major maintenance and school construction fund. They currently can be funded if they are, depending on how they rank, be funded through the REA fund itself. If they were to rank high enough and there was, or depending on the ranking and depending on appropriations that the department gets for major maintenance projects or school construction projects, they could find, they could be getting a direct appropriation outside of the REA fund itself or funded through the REA fund, most likely through the REA fund. But it would depend on how much appropriations the department receives. Does that make sense?
Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, I perhaps have a question maybe for, I see people from DEED are here. My question relates more to if we were to extend this sunset, what the potential impact would be on projects that are currently, quote, in the queue for borrowed areas or for non-REAA areas.
Well, Ms. Teschner is from the Department of Education as well, but I think the way I understand your question is that what kind of effect, well, I'll tell you right now from the Fairbanks North Star Borough, they have gone out for bonds, and right now we as a community pay 100% for those bonds, same for all municipalities that they've had in the last 5 years. So they would currently just do it as they have been. Yes.
To do that. So the question, I guess, then, would, Madam Chair, would be, I applaud your borough's ability to do that. My question is there any, has there been any assessment on whether if we were to extend the sunset, whether this would cripple other boroughs in their ability to advance forward needed projects? That's all.
Representative Ortiz, we have many waiting in the queue here to testify, and I think your questions will be answered at that point. We're here, we have Anchorage, Fairbanks, Palmer, and Kotzebue currently in the queue for testimony. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Anyway, I'm just going to ask this question. Regarding the ordering question for the REAAs, I'm just going from memory, but I think the first school on the new school construction list was for $37 million, and the second school is for $10 million. If we fully funded the school bond debt reimbursement, then I think that means that the REAAs get $39 million. I think that's right. What if, for example, if there's only like say $20 million that was available, does that first school not get funded? But you can't just jump over the schools, and so therefore the second school that's for $10 million, you would just not do that, and would the money be saved up then, or do you just automatically go over to the major maintenance list? I'm just trying to figure out the ordering of how that all happens.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I might need a lifeline from the audience, but I will try to answer the question as best as I can to start with. I know that if we don't have 100%, if the initial project on the list was $20 million and we only had $10 million, hypothetically, in the fund, we might only fund the design portion of that project and save the remainder for the next year, which we have done in the past. And Tim Merrick is our facilities manager, and he can explain a little bit more in detail how we've applied that in the past. But we would try to keep the REA fund to fund the REAs and try not to commingle funds. We've not done that yet.
And if you could put yourself on the record and help Representative Foster with his question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tim Merrig, Facility Manager at the Department of Education, and through the Chair, Representative Foster. There's a regulation that provides that if we don't have sufficient funds for the project ahead, that if that project can be phased, then we can fund a phase of that. Otherwise, we are permitted to fund further down the list.
Okay.
Follow-up?
So my understanding then is you can phase or you can skip that first school if it's, for example, $20 million and you've only got $10 million, then you could go to the next school. So thank you for that. And then as a follow-up, at what point do you go over to the major maintenance list? So if you had $20 million and the school cost $30 and you couldn't phase it, you could either go to the next school or you could go to the major maintenance list. At what point do you go to the major maintenance list?
Through the Chair, Representative Foster, the language for using the funding on the major maintenance list in the statute does require that priority be given to school construction projects. So there's not a simple answer without looking at, you know, the detail of the scenario. And we would develop those scenarios in conjunction with the districts being served at those priority points on the list as well as the department leadership.
Any further questions?
Sure.
Representative Josephson.
So as someone who used to teach in an REAA for 3 years, shortly after I left there, the George Morgan Senior High School, through the chair, burned to the ground and was rebuilt. In those situations, what priority does that community receive? In other words, what do you do in those situations where there is no school?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the priority list is established through a regular statutory process annually. If there are emergencies that come up, like we've had with, say, the earthquake that occurred in this past year, those issues might not be reflected specifically on the list, but they would soon be reflected if those districts chose to submit a project for funding. A school that is completely unhoused gets a significant amount of points awarded in our matrix, and the usual result of that is that it rises to the top of the priority list if they're fully unhoused and in a burn down.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to public testimony. Thank you so much. So I'm going to open public testimony on HB 106, and the first person I have online is Jim Anderson. If you could please put yourself on the record and your affiliation, you may begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Anderson. I'm the Chief Finance Officer for Anchorage School District. I'd like to start by thanking all of the legislators for your efforts during this session. I appreciate that your task is extremely difficult, trying to work through the enormity of balancing all of the state's priorities. I am, though, calling in support of continued school bond debt reimbursement for districts to our state. In the past, municipalities and boroughs incurred school bond debt in accordance with a state's contractual agreement in place at the time the bonds were approved. Those agreements allowed the state to maintain educational facilities across the cities, boroughs, and local communities. I'm very grateful, and the leadership in ASD is, to be living in Anchorage, who has continued to provide the maximum allowable for the operating fund in accordance with the state foundation formula. The realities over the last several years, though, are we did, in just a few years ago, have a bond not pass, and it was shortly after bond debt was repealed. So we do appreciate that our local property owners, both businesses and homeowners, also struggle as the state works through this recession. So naturally, I urge you to continue to support bond debt if it's at all possible as you work through the budget. I do want to thank you, though, again, for your efforts in supporting this great state, for allowing me to share my thoughts as we work through this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Next will be Bryce Ward. Mayor Ward?
Yes, thank you. I'm here to speak in favor of HB 106 as well. The ramifications of not funding the school debt reimbursement to the Fairbanks North Star Borough would equal about just over $9 million, which is roughly a $1.1 million increase for our local tax base. Speaking in favor of the extension of the program to pay for current debt that was approved by at least our voting base, with the assumption that the state would be contributing as part of that requirement for construction on schools. As I mentioned, this would impact our tax base. We currently do operate under a tax cap. However, debt at this point is exempt from that, so it would result in an increase to our tax base, and which is what we're proposing in our budget this year. The ability for the state to be able to partner with the communities at the local level, I think, is significant. With the 30% match that the local level is paying, this definitely goes into contributing to the ability for the state to be able to continue to provide school services with partnership with the local community. So I would speak in favor of HB 106.
And could you please put yourself on the record? Or not. Okay, well, that was Mayor Ward, Mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. So we will go on to Cheyenne Heindel.
This is Cheyenne Heindel, Finance Director for the Managed Sitna Borough. Thank you for letting me testify today. I'm calling in support of HB 106. The borough has had significant growth over the last several years. We're continuing to grow. If we have to absorb the debt service reimbursement, we're looking at an additional two mills for our taxpayers. But the other part of this is we are in need of more school facilities, and this has been a great partnership with the state, and we would like to continue that. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next we have Lucy Nelson. Ms. Nelson?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Lucy Nelson, Mayor of the Northwest Arctic Borough. We serve 11 communities in the Northwest Arctic Borough. We provide public safety, economic development planning, public services to Northwest communities. For the fiscal year 2020, the Northwest Arctic Borough bond debt balance is $40.9 million, of which none is reimbursable by the state of Alaska if the FY20 proposed governor's budget is approved due to the moratorium. Adding additional years would devastate our borough finances. The borough would be required to supplant the funding previously committed to be paid by the state. Essential borough services which protect the life, health, and safety of our residents would have to be reduced or eliminated. The state of Alaska is responsible for funding schools, made a prior commitment to reimburse a portion of school bond debt, and local governments have relied on that commitment in good faith. Any change in the state's commitment on school bond debt reimbursement poses a significant financial burden on local communities. We understand the state's fiscal shortfall and the need to balance the state budget and place this moratorium on bond debt. However, the Northwest Arctic Borough is currently operating under a PILT agreement with TEC. At the time our borough negotiated the PILT, there was no discussion on the elimination of bond debt reimbursement payments from the state. To be very clear, any reduction to this bond debt payment will devastate our borough, which is already suffering from high crime and the lack of basic infrastructure. To be very clear, any reduction is going to be very difficult to plan for. Unlike other rural communities, we are not an REAA school district. The Northwest Arctic Borough contributes over $2 million each year toward these bond repayments. While this is a large amount for our region, we are committed to education in our schools. However, eliminating the state reimbursement will cost our borough $4 million in FY 2020. We ask you to consider this carefully as you move forward with difficult decisions. Our borough has no new revenue source to make up this huge reduction. We have $14.3 million of bond debt repayments pledged by the state for our school construction projects. This amount does not include the additional Kivalina school bond debt, which is $12.7 million. We request you please help us by paying the authorized bond debt reimbursement for the agreed upon timeline. We have no other choices available to absorb this huge reduction. Thank you for your time.
Ms. Nelson, we have a few questions, but I have the first one. I just want to make sure you do understand that this bill has nothing to do with the bond reimbursement on your current bonds that were taken out before 2015.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Representative Joseph, and just a, also we have Dr. O'Brien, who's also from the Northwest Arctic School District, so the superintendent. So you can try the question here, but we also have somebody else from the same district. So Representative Josephson.
Well, just to follow up, Madam Co-Chair, and your comment, Ms. Nelson, it seems that there's certainly a good argument that the world continues to advance and the earth spins, as I say, and you have new needs that have come about since 2015. But my understanding is when the moratorium began then surely the whole world was on notice that they may be subject to taking care of their own bonds in full. Was that your understanding, or am I missing something?
Can you say that question again, please?
Well, follow up. So it seems like there's two sets of arguments. One is that prior to 2015, subject to appropriation, there was an expectation that if all went well, the state would be generous and help. But after 2015, there surely couldn't have been any expectation at all, even if the need was there. Am I right about that?
Well, we feel that the state is responsible for funding schools, and we hold to that.
Thank you.
Brief at ease.
Okay, we're back on the record. So as we've heard with some of the testimony before we go to Dr. O'Brien here, is that I want to reiterate that the bond debt reimbursement that we're currently talking about in the operating budget is not part of this bill. That is bonds that were taken out before 2015, which had a 70% state, 30% local, or possibly 60% state and 40%. All those bonds on there had, you know, only through the appropriation of the legislature. Those bonds are not part of this bill, and I know there's been some confusion in the testimony. What this would do is, for the past 5 years, no municipality had been able to take out a bond with the understanding that the state would pay. They can put out the bonds, but now everyone it knows it's 100% the community's responsibility. What this bill would do would extend that same moratorium for 5 years, from 2020 to 2025. It will have no effect whatsoever about the appropriation that may or may not happen with the current debt from our school districts. So I know as we're getting ready to go into the operating budget, maybe my timing wasn't the best in the world. So with that, we're gonna go ahead and go to Dr. O'Brien, and if people have other questions, I'm sure she'll be happy to answer them as well. Dr. O'Brien?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dr. Anne Marie O'Brien, Superintendent of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to testify to this committee, and I'm calling in support of the Northwest Arctic Borough. I want to make it state that we are against the extension of the moratorium to 2025. As stated by Mayor Nelson, the Northwest Arctic Borough is under a payment in lieu of taxes, TILT agreement, and they negotiated that tilt agreement in good faith with the Red Dog Mine and understanding that bond debt reimbursement would end 2020 in time to support the Kivalina School and bond for the borough match for this, this school. As was stated again by Mayor Nelson, and I'm stating in support of the borough, under the PILT, the borough has nowhere else to go to raise funds. And that's why we feel very strongly that extending this and putting an end to extending this moratorium is very detrimental to us. So we want to have this committee give consideration for boroughs receiving their funding under PILT. As you may know, the Kivalina School was part of the Moore settlement. We have begun the process of working on that school. The access evacuation road is in progress in Kivalina now, and with plans for a long overdue school to start no later than 2021. And it is necessary to have the bond debt reimbursement in place to move forward. The borough, understandably, in our region, has many needs to support the people of this region, and we respect and honor their need to do that and their commitment to do that. So again, I'm speaking again in behalf on rejecting the extension of the moratorium to 2025. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. O'Brien, appreciate that. So coming to the room, we have Nilsen Drizin from the Alaska Municipal League. If you could please come up and put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Nils Andreas, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. And I want to maybe start by saying thank you for clarifying. Earlier, there did seem to be some confusion over the intent of the bill. And I think what we heard from earlier testifiers is the importance of school bond debt reimbursement to local governments around the state and to school districts. And in order for us to approach this bill effectively and recognizing that it's just under a week old almost, we're still working to determine municipal impacts. But we do need to be able to answer the question of, and we need to agree to this answer, of whether the state has an obligation to fund the construction and or maintenance of school facilities. If the answer is yes, then the next question is to what extent. And from there, we can answer how. AML believes that the Constitution is clear that it is the state's responsibility to establish and maintain a system of public schools. And in this case, we believe that this extends to the construction of those schools. Therefore, we're left with determining what this looks like. If and when we have agreed upon answers to questions such as this, then we can better provide certainty for school districts and local governments. Our fear is that extending the moratorium will result in minimal investment into major construction and maintenance as districts wait another 5 years before being able to address current concerns. We know that deferred maintenance is currently a challenge, and extending the moratorium may compound that challenge. This isn't to say that some municipalities may make different decisions than I've outlined here, and clearly Fairbanks and others have worked to address current concerns as best they can. It doesn't mean that school districts won't work with local governments to make necessary investments. However, it will still fall back to these basic questions of whose responsibility and the extent of that responsibility as we move forward. And it will fall to local taxpayers to determine whether tax increases at the local level can and should be borne or sustained, and whether those can occur now, or if those local tax dollars are better leveraged against state investment in the future. I think that clearly it is in the state's interest to place some stronger guidelines around this program, including better control over its debt structure, and to ensure that the funding of school construction or maintenance is consistent with available revenues. AML would look forward to that conversation, and where there might be changes to the program, be involved in those, such that all parties are at the table to determine a sustainable path for future school capital investments. We recognize this committee's commitment to following through on past obligations to reimburse school bond debt and appreciate that. And we think this is critical. Let's work next on an assessment of needs that have been delayed over the last 5 years, where we've seen progress, and what the potential impact of 5 more years would mean to those communities, school districts, and students. I look forward to working with the bill's sponsor and this committee toward that end. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Knopp.
Thank you. So, thank you, Madam Chair. So the one thing you said piqued my interest is you said something along the lines of lining our debt with our ability to pay for it. And I think that's exactly what we're doing by extending this moratorium. So I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Knopp, through the chair. I think that 5 years is a long time period. It's a long time period for without knowing what the current needs look like at the local level in terms of school districts that do need additional construction funding or major maintenance conducted. We can't match need to current revenue without knowing what the needs look like. Additionally, the opportunity to bond for debt, if we were to consider it, caps or differing matching amounts or some way to shape the requests, I think that would better enable the state to structure this program relative to current revenues.
Follow up. So you don't think that it was absolutely clear to voters at the time that they sold the bonds when they acknowledged the fact that it would be subject to appropriations and there's a chance they would bear the entire burden? You don't think that communities knew that, or we didn't lay that out well enough?
Sure. Through the chair, I think that for prior committed school bond debt reimbursement, Representative Knopp, that varied by community in terms of the public understanding. It also built on a 17-year history of that school bond debt being paid, that the public made those commitments.
Any further questions?
Just if I might, a comment.
Let's see if there's any other questions, then we can do a comment. I do have a question. So do you think it's more fair the legislature to have districts go out and bond without really looking at the ability to be able to pay those bonds once they've been voted on?
Madam Chair, I think that I would be better able to evaluate this bill if we had a needs assessment in terms of which districts currently need major construction or maintenance, and then to evaluate that against local tax base ability to pay for or have matching amounts, either at the bond or in other formats. Northwest Arctic Borough earlier talked about their PILT agreement, which is very different than other boroughs' experience. So there's different tax bases and tax formats that local governments apply to their ability to bond. And I think having a more nuanced view of what that looks like at the local level would help us all in understanding what a moratorium might mean, might look like for local residents.
But wouldn't the first question be, if the state currently does not have the funds to be able to reimburse, yet we're going to let this sunset and again have municipalities go out to bond, and I think you were absolutely correct that many voters who go out, even though it's written on the ballot, do not understand necessarily what the difference would be. It just seems to me, I understand maybe looking at the program, but wouldn't the first thing that we need to look at is the ability to be able to actually pay any kind of obligation from this time forward?
Madam Chair, yes. Which I think, it goes back to the earlier confusion over whether this extends and continues to pay that reimbursement and or whether it is only focused on the moratorium. So if it extends the repayment of current bond obligations, we certainly support that. It's whether we extend the moratorium and whether we've done the analysis to justify that.
Okay, thank you very much. And just again to make it clear, this bill has absolutely nothing to do with paying what's currently out there. I brought this bill forward because we are having difficulty being able to pay what we currently owe, and it would be unfair to Alaskans, in my opinion, to put more bonds out there and then to discuss why we're not paying them versus not to. And I'm proud of my district, and I know it's not the only school district that when a school truly needs that effort, our community steps up to the plate, and now they know it's 100% there obligation. So thank you for your testimony. We're going to come back to the committee with any further questions or comments, starting with Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm likely to support this bill, but I want it clear that I do it with sadness because I think there's been a lack of resolve since 2015 to have a comprehensive fiscal plan. It's something I fought for, and with support I continue to fight for, and vote for new revenue. And I think given the circumstance and context, the bill is warranted, but I have those remarks to make.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate your thoughts. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to associate my comments with the previous speaker.
Just one moment. I haven't closed public testimony yet, which I should have done. Is there any other testimony online? Anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on HB 106? Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. Sorry about that, Representative Ortiz. The floor is yours.
Again, I'd like to associate my associate myself with the comments of the previous speaker in relationship to likely being supportive of this bill, but also with recognition that by us extending the moratorium, we're not extending deferred maintenance needs. We're not extending deferred construction needs. There's real growth in the Matsu area right now, of population, which indicates a need for schools. And so by us extending the moratorium, we're not helping the overall ability for our states, our need to provide for adequate education and facilities for our children of Alaska. And so that's just the reality. Could I ask that we ask Mr. Merrick to come forward again? I'd like to ask him a little bit more about his knowledge about projects that are out there, both deferred maintenance and school projects that are out there in the future that might not go forward if we were to extend this moratorium.
Absolutely. He was probably hoping to come back up. If you could again put yourself on the record. I'm not sure how much he will be able to tell you about, because now I don't know whether the projects are currently coming to deed because they're not looking for those kinds of funds. But we'll see what's coming to the department, because there are other funds that are also available that's a needs list. So go right ahead, sir.
Thank you. Tim Merrig, Department of Education Facilities Manager.
And can you help Representative Ortiz with your knowledge of what may be in the queue, what you may or may not know that of the needs of our schools that would normally go for the 70-30 or 60-40 program as it used to be?
Through the chair, sure. And Representative Ortiz, is that
in essence, that's my question, Mr. Merrig, is are you aware of, or do you know of, issues related to either deferred maintenance issues or new school construction plans that may be put on hold if we were to adopt this moratorium? Is that
sure? Okay, yes, and through the chair. So, Representative Ortiz, we do have a program within the state of Alaska for identifying and collecting school capital needs, and that program is an annual opportunity for all districts to submit their requirements to the state. We have done that this past year for a list for possible FY20 funding, and that those lists have been made available to the public and to the legislature, et cetera. So you can see from those lists that there are plenty of needs expressed by districts in the state, and we have probably likely many districts who have not really participated as well as they might have participated in that process, and so there may be other needs not expressed there. The only district that we have had real active conversations with regarding the reopening of debt has been the Matsu Borough School District, and they were speaking with us about the timeline process of where they might be able to introduce what they were hoping was somewhere in the neighborhood of a $20 to $25 million bond package for that. Our advice to them was get on the list, and so that we could see their needs and see where the priorities were, and at the opportunity then where if there was an opportunity for the debt to reopen, we would have worked through the eligibility questions and other questions associated with those projects, so that we, they would have a good understanding of being able to start with their voters speaking to those. That's the only district that we've had active conversations with.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When a community bonds for a new school building, does Department of Education weigh in on the language that's presented to voters on that bond issue?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, we do not have a requirement in statute anymore to pre-approve voter language for debt service for schools.
Follow-up Hello? Comment. In my days on the school board, we went to great lengths to educate the voters that although the intention is for a 70-30 split, it's not a guarantee. And we educated our voters that the possibility exists that we may not get the 70% state reimbursement. And I guess that's the comment, is there's a risk in any school bond program today, and I would suspect most communities look at that reimbursement rate and are cautious about moving forward. They must have to believe that there's the risk that the community is going to be paying for this school and the state isn't going to be in a position to help reimburse those costs. That's just a comment.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Carpenter.
Not a question.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Ortiz?
I have a question for Representative LeBon, if that's appropriate.
So let's see if there, since we have one member, one person
sure,
in the hot seat,
sure.
We'll see, is there any more questions? Okay, looks like you you may go. Thank you. And Representative Ortiz, yes, you may ask a question to Representative LeBon.
Representative, because of your background in banking and your familiarity probably with the bonding process in general, so if the state appears to be more and more unlikely participant in the bonding program, does that increase the bond rates that actually would be offered to communities for the building of these schools? In other words, do they not only not have the opportunity cost of getting the 70% match, which is the big opportunity cost, but they also have, I'm asking, do they also have a potential opportunity cost of paying a higher rate for those bonds?
LeBon.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, your question's a very appropriate one, and there is that underlining risk that the rate of the bond might be a little bit higher, but these are general obligation bonds. The community has to step and stand behind them. It's a commitment of the community, and it's with voter approval, it is an obligation that will be paid. It comes in number one for a community to pay. It has the very highest priority.
Thank you.
And it's my understanding that they have always been under the bond proposition 100% underneath that obligation, even when we were giving the 70% on that, when they signed the bottom line, it's for 100% of the obligation. Brooks Carpenter?
Yeah, just a quick comment that it seems to strikes me that we've got a $1.6 billion deficit and our economy is in recession. It's obvious that it can't support the current spending levels that we have right now. And what this extension of the moratorium would require is that entities who would look to the state to fund their debt reimbursement will have to look elsewhere. And that's not necessarily a bad thing while we have an economy that's struggling and can't afford the spending that we have right now. Thank you.
Any more questions or comments? And with that, seeing none, we will set this bill aside. Our next finance meeting is April 2nd at 1:30 p.m., which we will be hearing HB 38, the capital budget. And with that, at 2:39, we are adjourned. Thank you.